a motion to accept the April 16th meeting minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, John. Did I see a second pop in there? Great, thank you. All righty, those are all those in favor, please say aye, raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Awesome. Anybody abstaining? Okay, great. All right, so Matt, what I'd like to do is jump right into item number four, since we have guests with us.
And, sure, that would work fine.
Kim's already reading my mind. Thank you, Kim. And so we have a few folks from Titan Energy. Some of us are familiar with the services that Titan provides, but today particularly they're going to talk about the procurement overview relative to electricity, which Krog has engaged Titan to assist us all on a regional basis. So, Matt, I'm going to turn that over to you to lead off, if that's okay.
Yeah, happy to do that, Peter. So good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to today's meeting. And very pleased to introduce Chris Rahm, who I've known for many, many years from Titan Energy. And they recently won the contract through Krog, through our Capital Region Purchasing Council, and went through a competitive bidding process, as we always utilize. And thought, as a new vendor, although many of our towns are familiar with them, as you said, Peter, it would be helpful to bring in Chris and some key members of his team to talk about the services they can provide to our members. And I want to thank Kim Bona for leading the bidding process. Great job, Kim. And Chris, we'd love to hear from you and the members of your team.
Great. Thanks, Matt. First of all, you know, on behalf of Titan, we want to thank you for the opportunity. You know, we take a lot of pride in being selected through the bid process. We know it was competitive. We know we were selected. We look forward to delivering value on the energy side of things that we bring. So again, thank you so much for all that. I wanted to just start by introducing the folks on the Titan team that are here. First, Sinead Ross. Sinead joined Titan in 2020. She's our Director of Marketing and Communications. She has a very strong energy background, both on the solar side of things as well as electricity procurement. In addition to her role as the Marketing and Communications Director, she also manages one of our more complex relationships, which is a nationwide relationship. Has done a great job there. And she also is involved with the majority of the relationships that we have with folks like yourselves or chambers, channel partners, and so forth. So zero doubt you'll be hearing more from her and seeing a lot of Sinead during the relationship, and key part of our team. Kyle Ram, who spoke a little bit earlier. Kyle came to Titan in March of 2018. Kyle is our CFO and the VP of Operations. And from an operational standpoint, that means our generation side of the business, our data management side of the business, our efficiency business, including EV charging systems rolled up through Kyle, as well as being, again, our CFO. Prior to Titan, Kyle came from a key position at a private equity firm in Massachusetts, so he has a very strong financial background as well as operationally now. Again, you'll be seeing a lot of from Kyle and hearing from Titan. The key guy who's going to spend most of the time talking today is Justin Carney. Justin actually joined Titan in April 2007, which I think makes him the second longest tenured person at Titan. You'll hardly tell by the looks of him. He still looks like a young guy. Justin's vice president of market development. And as such, our commodity business, both electricity and natural gas, run up through him, as well as those sales activities in our pricing desk, which we refer to as market support. Justin's knowledge of utilities, energy markets, third-party supply, regulatory activity, as it relates to all these things, run very deep. So I know he's looking forward to filling you in on market conditions and also how the reverse auction process will work. Like I said, collectively or individually, we can talk about this stuff all day long, but I just want to give you maybe a minute overview about Titan for you, for those of you who don't know much about us. We were formed in 2001, which brings us to about 23 years. The company started off in Rocky Hill, is a Connecticut-based company, always has been. We moved over to Hartford about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, just before the pandemic. But we are a Connecticut-based company, and we're a Hartford-based company, and know the area very well. I'm going to talk a couple of minutes about the other things we do, but again, we're headquartered in Connecticut. We do have a nationwide presence, you know, which has built up a strong following from here to California, Maine to Florida. We handle about $500 million worth of energy commodity value for our clients annually, which really translates into a lot of respect and leverage with the supply base, which serves our client base very, very well. Large number of clients, as you can see, and a great set of skill sets that support our client base, again, nationwide. Although we are, again, a Connecticut-based company with a strong regional presence. Justin, or whoever's turning the page, if you could go to the next one, that'd be great. Very quickly, Kim asked us just to touch very briefly on the other things that we do. We're going to talk procurement today, electricity procurement. We also do data management through a platform that we have called Titan Energy Intelligence. We do a lot of on-site generation. We do an awful lot of solar work in the state of Connecticut and elsewhere. We also own, maintain, and operate 5 cogen facilities around the state, one in New Jersey, and about ready to build another one now in Southington. So we have a very good background in on-site generation. Energy efficiency, both lighting, mechanical, building management systems, and also in that part of our business is EV charging systems, which we're very, very, very active in the state of Connecticut and have literally a couple hundred projects that we've completed and processed. Very knowledgeable about that side of the business as well. Demand response, which is really curtailment and a revenue opportunity for our client base by virtue of that curtailment, is also something we do. We like this chart because it's full cycle. We never stop looking for opportunities for our clients to bring value, which means potential cost reduction, means energy risk management, means superb customer service. And it's a continuous cycle of involvement with our client base. That's what we do. I know everybody's here today to talk about the reverse auction platform as well as kind of the state of the market, what we think about that. And for that, I'll hand it over to Justin.
Thanks, Chris. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for having us this afternoon. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of you over the coming weeks and months and working on a variety of different projects coming up. You know, I want to touch quickly on our process for energy procurement, specific to reverse auction as well. But definitely want to just do this quickly so, you know, we can, you know, spend some time maybe getting some questions and discussion after this. But just very, very, you know, kind of high level about our process. The way our process typically works, obviously, you know, so we've, you know, just recently won this RFP and we're going to be, you know, meeting everyone soon and talking about the past history. We really take a lot of pride in the beginning part of our process and learning about what our clients have been doing and purchasing. We do work with a significant amount of public organizations. So, you know, because of that, we do understand that, you know, for the most part, towns, municipalities, boards of education like to have a fixed price, which means, you know, locking in your rate for a period of time. There are different products that customers can sign up to within the spectrum, but again, most of the customers that we work with on the municipal side elect a fixed price. So, you know, what that means is that when you elect a fixed price, what you want to get out of that is to know that you're going with the lowest cost option and you're buying at the right time. So, you know, the two things that I'm going to talk about today, both the process of doing a reverse auction, which is designed to help drive down the bid prices from the relevant suppliers in a market, as well as a market update, just to talk about the timing and what is going on in the market today. And I will try to go quickly again to leave some room for discussion. So just, you know, on reverse auction, so I, you know, and I'm looking to learn a little bit more about everyone on the call's experience with reverse auctions and whether you've done one before. But in essence, what a reverse auction does is it takes a bid process, a competitive bid process, and it, you know, essentially publishes that bid process online. There are a variety of different ways that you can set the process up, which we'll, you know, talk about in the coming weeks. But in essence, you know, the sort of general principle is that the suppliers that are bidding into the reverse auction platform at some point are seeing the bids from the other suppliers. And you know, so and then at some point it will go blind, and then they kind of have to, you know, shoot in the dark, if you will. But the idea is that, you know, by seeing the competitive prices from other suppliers, they're actually driving down their own rates to win the business, rather than, you know, a competitive bid process where maybe they're not seeing that. So the process that we're going to run is designed, again, to drive down those costs. We work with all of the eligible suppliers in the marketplace in Connecticut. One of the goals that we always have when we go into every RFP we run is to maximize supplier participation. And that is what we intend to do on the first and you know, however many after RFPs that we will run in this case, because of the fact that, again, supplier participation is paramount. You have a reverse auction, having one or two options, or two or four options, probably not getting the best out of that reverse auction in the first place. So our job is to maximize supplier participation, which we take a lot of pride in. You know, so I just wanted to put a quick screenshot kind of on, you know, the Titan Energy reverse auction platform, because we don't, you know, have time necessarily to go into or looking forward to going into, you know, kind of how it works in the coming weeks. But essentially what will happen is, you know, this will be published, and, you know, whoever on the CROG side is handling this will have logins, and we will kind of go through the whole part of the process where the bid is run, how we set those dates, how the actual bid is visible to everybody, and what the outputs are from these bids. But again, the reverse auction process is designed to help one part of the procurement process, which is the competitive bid process. Again, the reverse auction is a excellent way to drive down rates. So, you know, I wanted to spend again, you know, because, you know, I frankly, you know, we just, we're in an interesting time in the marketplace. And I think, you know, one of the things I want to talk quickly about is what's going on in the energy market, and how we might want to hit the ground running, if you will, with the way that the energy market is going now, and some signs of what might be ahead. You know, and this is, again, this is something that we do on a regular basis with clients that we handle. So these market updates can be scheduled on a regular basis, or we can do them ad hoc. But this is definitely a standard part of the process where we're going to fill you in on what's going on in the market. And what this is intending to do, so we talked about the competitive bid process designed to drive down the supplier rates. When you buy is equally important when you are buying energy. You know, you could run a competitive bid process at the height of the market and you've driven down supplier rates, but you're still buying at a high price time. One of the most important things is timing the market right. And again, we take a lot of pride in that as well. So just to give some, you know, again, this is a sort of a little cross-section of what goes on in the pricing world. So this is a chart showing forward natural gas prices. And for those who, you know, might follow energy, might know that natural gas prices drive electricity prices. So as you look at natural gas prices, you are essentially looking at electricity prices. So when we talk about energy market updates, we are almost always going to be tracking natural gas rates. And what this chart shows is where forward natural gas prices have trended over the last 2.5 years. So if you think about this, you know, this all the way to the present day is all the way over to the right in this chart. And you can see that the market has been through a significant amount of turbulence, primarily in 2022, that we, you know, have been well out of at this point. The result of the, you know, two successive mild winters that we had in New England as well as North America, have driven down rates. You know, in our world, we call that a sort of lucky scenario, because, you know, weather is one of the biggest contributors to energy rates, sort of going up and down. And, you know, you can't really predict these things. So the market dynamics created a lot of volatility in 2022. You know, the primary reason that you see this big increase in the energy rates right around April of 2022 was when Russia invaded Ukraine. It you know, set off energy, natural gas prices across the globe. And, you know, frankly, if any customers were having to buy energy during that year, it was tough. And, you know, unfortunately, we did have clients who had to figure out what to do there. We navigated through. But the good news is that times are very good right now. And that's the one thing that we wanted to point out is, again, you know, in the spirit of hitting the ground running with CROG, is that, you know, the rates are very good, and there are some signs that they may be pointing upward in the coming months ahead. So this is the same chart, but this is showing electricity. So, you know, this in some ways is designed to kind of show how these things correlate with each other. You can see that the rates are, you know, so basically this goes back to the beginning of 2021. The rates had gone through that turbulence in 2022 and now have fallen dramatically since then. We do look at this period here in February of 2024 as probably where the market may have bottomed out during calendar year 2024. Obviously, a lot can happen. But really what happened there was natural gas was being sold off at a significant discount to whatever producers needed to make on that. And it sent signals into the market that have then sent the market prices up. So this is, again, part of these, you know, some of the moving trends that we're seeing that might, you know, continue onward as we head throughout the year. So, you know, like any commodity, supply and demand is going to be super important. This is sort of what I was pointing to. You saw those rates where they kind of bottomed out here in February of 2024. What that did is it sent a big signal. This is U.S. natural gas supply, so U.S. production. Production fell dramatically starting then and is basically leveled off at this much lower number of production. So this is the kind of thing that we consider to be a leading indicator for prices. And you know, so this started to be a leading indicator in that February, March timeframe. And obviously you can see here that it did have that impact on the forward prices. So we expect this to continue on. Again, in the coming weeks, we look forward to discussing, you know, this in a bit more detail. On the demand side, the demand has been very healthy. You know, so again, you try to consider supply and demand. The green line here is 2024. What's especially interesting is 2024 started way ahead of previous years on the demand side, but then you can see the impact that the mild winter had on this green line where it just fell through the floor because, you know, the whole country had a mild winter. It is more than recovered. It is right around where it was last year and at the top of the five-year range. This we expect to continue on throughout the year. And, you know, there's a variety of things that go into natural gas demand, but we do not expect anything to curtail demand. So if you consider a healthy demand, falling production, again, that's where we start to see the leading indicators in prices going forward. And then the elephant in the room, and this is the last thing I want to touch on the market update and then leave some room for discussion, is the biggest reason why we saw the turbulence that we saw in 2022 is that there's been a large dynamic change in the natural gas market in the United States, which is that the United States is now exporting a significant amount of natural gas to the rest of the world via liquefied natural gas, also known as LNG. So just to, you know, show quick chart here, in January of 2016, we are exporting zero natural gas to the rest of the world this way. And now we are exporting so much that one, you know, any one of these operators of these plants, which is what this is made up of, take 2 to 5% off of the daily natural gas production. So this is a massive change in the United States natural gas makeup. And one of the biggest reasons that we saw the volatility that we saw in 2022 and that we will expect to see going forward, which is to say, as our markets intersect or are involved with international markets, international events are going to have impacts in the United States that for the past 15 years prior to 2022, they did not. Our markets were disconnected. You could have things happening in the Middle East. You could have things happening in Europe, and it wouldn't really impact our prices. So, you know, from the United States perspective, this is a big change and something that we, you know, the further that this, and I guess I'll go back here, the further that this lull goes on, the more worried we are about, you know, again, customers not buying early enough in the cycle. So that's all I had for today. I know I was probably talking very fast. I was just trying to fit within the time. So I again, thank you all for listening, and I'm looking forward to meeting and talking with you guys going forward. Anybody have any questions for us?
Yeah, great. Thank you, Justin. Love to open it up to questions or comments. I understand most of us, I believe, have at some point have been exposed to reverse auction the process. But if there's questions, please take advantage of having all these experts with us this afternoon.
Justin, would it make sense just to mention, you know, kind of the start of the process, what we're going to need and how that gets organized?
For sure. Yeah. So, you know, to start the process off, given that we don't necessarily have any of the individual towns' data, it would, you know, be a data collection process to start off, which would entail, you know, utility invoices or spreadsheets of accounts that have the equivalent information on it. There would be, you know, letters of authorizations needed from the utility. And then, you know, we really start organizing all the input side. But again, I think part of the other part of the process is really just having that upfront conversation with the team and understanding kind of what the history has been, learning about, you know, how you have all gone about it in the past, learning more about the contract that's in place, and then, you know, kind of custom tailoring the RFP from there, because of the fact that, you know, again, the RFP can be, you know, done in a few different ways. You know, understanding sort of how the aggregation has worked in the past, I think would be super important.
Again, the only thing so, I think to Justin's recommendation, probably the sooner we get started on that, the better, because we can run, you know, various iterations and start looking where the market is, to his point. And the data collection piece sometimes takes some time. So we should get jumping on that as soon as possible. And you know, the only other thing I would recommend is if there's longer periods of time, Kim, at some point where you'd like us to come in and either meet individually with some of the members, or if there's other functions going on that where we could talk about Titan some more or answer some more questions, we'd be all about that. And really want to be a key partner of yours going forward.
So, Kim, I had a question for you. As part of the procurement process, did we put out a quote unquote feeler or request for interest to our member communities? Do you have a sense of at your fingertips of how many folks communities did indicate that they would be interested in participating?
Yeah. So right now we have about, I want to say we had 14 participants in our last consortium and reverse auction. Right now we're at about 12. And to speak to the process a little bit more from our end, I will be sending out another reminder to CRPC members and, of course, PROG members, you know, kind of a final call who wants to participate in the consortium this time around. And myself, with the help of Titan, we will work with our towns to collect that data that they need on their end, Titan needs on their end to prepare for the auction. And ideally we are thinking, Pauline, correct me if I'm wrong, but September this fall, we want to conduct that auction as we have a contract start date of January 1st with whomever the awarded supplier will be.
Hey, Kim, yeah, I was just going to say, with all due respect, you know, would it make sense, I'll lean on Justin to help answer this, to start maybe a bit earlier to take advantage of, you know, so we're watching that market together, so we're prepared when the market does cooperate, or where it's cooperating the best, we're ready to strike. Again, collecting that information early, and then, you know, we'll keep everybody engaged and say, hey, we think right now might be a good opportunity to. We don't need to wait till September, even though the contract ends in January, but that's just my two cents. And Justin probably better to answer that than I.
Yeah, I think I'll take that, Pauline. I think that if we can get all the information together by, I think, the target of mid-July, end of July, right? So that you have all the information together mid-July. It's a tough time to do that, but we then at that point in time, we'll defer to you in terms of the timing of when to run the reverse auction, right? Based on that graph I saw, July, August might be good times to do that. So it is last time we sort of lucked out because we did it in October, but it happened to be a dip right the week that we did it. So there's a little bit of luck and science involved in this, I understand. So we can defer to you on in terms of that timing, exact timing of when the reverse auction is run. And, you know, we can also, if the date that we choose looks good when we choose it, but then starts to look bad when we get closer, there's some flexibility there. We just have to have the contracts in place by January 1, right?
So one question that comes to mind is in terms of the quote unquote sustainable or green renewable energy as part of the package. How does that get determined? Is it a whole, is it by user, or is it by just, we're going to buy 20% of renewables and.
Yeah.
How's that
so
worked out, Justin?
Depending on how much green energy you want to buy, it would be actually, that's a good question. So are you saying that some towns would have different percentages that are required than others, and that would want to?
That's essentially my question. Is there flexibility there, or is it all just from a procurement perspective, it's easier, more flexible, and easier to get responses if it's, you know, everyone is getting 25% green?
If it were standardized, that it certainly would work. If I'm sure we can make it work if you had different percentages, you know, carve outs for, you know, members here and there. You know, so definitely would want to kind of get through, you know, the details on that and what we need to understand about the requirements, but I'm sure we could work it out.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, folks, questions? So, looks like those, and we have no limit on the number of towns, Kim?
No, great. All are welcome. Just have to be a CRPC member.
More the merrier, especially.
Yes.
Is that?
That's our,
generally
that's
how
our
it
motto.
Works? Okay. All right. So we should, as towns, we should be, our staff should be expecting another inquiry from you, Kim, directly.
Yes, it'll okay. Come from our constant contact system, our email system.
Okay. And that should be here in just a matter of weeks.
A week. Yeah.
Okay. So all town folks, that make sure your energy people or whomever manages that, which I'm sure they wear 14 different hats, but make sure they're aware, keep an eye open for it.
Or feel free to just ping me right now. If it's in your brain and you want to participate, send me an email now. You don't have to wait for my reminder. So.
Fantastic. So anybody have any questions about the procurement or the marketplace? If these guys have a great crystal ball, this is the time to pick their brains.
No, we're available at any time.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Titan team. Appreciate the relationship as we begin it. And I encourage everyone to take a hard look at not only the procurement piece, but also the other services that Titan provides as well.
And we really appreciate the opportunity. Looking forward to building, you know, a large and go forward relationship, and really look forward to working with all the towns and CROG specifically. So thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, folks.
Take care.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, team.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good seeing you, Matt.
Good to see you.
So before we move on to the next item, I wanted to just say hello and welcome the new town manager from Bloomfield.
Woo-hoo.
Out Swap. Mm-hmm. So welcome to your new role, and welcome to the Municipal Services Committee. If you need anything, you just ask John Coleman. John knows it. John knows everything CROG, so you're good to go.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's my honor to be
amongst your folks, and looking forward to establishing good, strong networks that can help not only in Bloomfield's success, but in our collective success as a region. So I look forward to next opportunity to be there in person with you. And you're absolutely right. John Coleman is a superstar, and I'll be leaning on him for the time that we work together. So happy to have him filling in the capacity of representing the town manager's office, and we're going to look to make good things happen. So thank you.
Great. Absolutely. We'll looking forward to getting together soon. So next item is the automated traffic safety devices, enforcement devices, and I believe town staff. CROG staff has done a little bit of research on this, and I'm going to turn it over to Matt to bring us up to date on where we stand relative to some of the discussions regarding procurement issues.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I'm happy to kick things off here. So recall, we did have a discussion on this a couple months back. You know, Peter, I think you were instrumental in bringing this item forward along with Fred Presley from Weathersfield and others. So we got together as a staff team, and we did a couple of things. Number one, we prepared a dedicated page on our website. Kim, maybe you could bring that up. Just to provide some really basic information regarding ATESD devices. It's a toolkit. You see the enabling legislation here as well. I think we've got one or more sample ordinances in place. We've got this video that provides a very good explanation of the equipment and what it's all about. So we created this dedicated page on our website and the toolkit for our member towns. Also, Kim, and I want to thank Kim again, she consulted with the committee that helps run our Capital Region Purchasing Council and obtained their interest in engaging in a procurement process to obtain the consulting assistance on the engineering side that our towns would need if they want to move forward to implement this equipment and get approval by the state. The committee also expressed an interest in, at a future point, going out to bid for the equipment itself. So I want to thank Kim for her efforts there. And now I want to turn to our transportation planning colleagues, Rob Eloise and Roger Cron, who can provide a little bit more detail in terms of what the state, it's a bit of a refresher for some of you, maybe new information for others, what the state is looking for in order for a municipality to get approval from the state to implement a program in their community. Rob and Roger and Kim, I believe there are some slides we want to share.
So, hi, I'm Roger Cron, Transportation Principal Engineer here at CROG, and as most of you probably know, the legislation that was approved last year for automated traffic safety devices required Connecticut DOT to come up with guidelines, and they did that in January of 2024. And those guidelines require that any municipality that's interested, and you can go to the next slide, prepare a plan that must be submitted and approved by OSTA, Office of Traffic Safety Administration. And so just at the most basic level of what is required by that plan, there are four location types that are allowed. One is at traffic signals. Another at approved school zones, and those are school zones that are approved by OSTA or the local traffic authority in according to legislation, or approved pedestrian safety zones, again, that are approved by OSTA or municipalities. I don't know if there are any approved right now, and other qualifying locations based on crashes or based on speeding violations. So those are the only four types. And then the next slide, some of the criteria that needs to be provided in the plan that has to be submitted to OSTA includes details such as the average daily traffic and the roadway geometry. If you're looking at a signal location, you have to provide the specific red light running violations. If you're looking at speeding enforcement, you need to provide data about speeding. If you're looking at a traffic signal plan, you have to show that you have the optimized phasing and timing. If you're looking at a red light violation camera, you need to show using a CONDOT, not a CONDOT, a UConn crash repository tool called the red light evaluation tool, that there are indeed red light violations at that location. And then you also have to show an equity analysis that no more than two of the devices will be in a qualified census tract. So that's just a snapshot of all the many items that are required in the plan. And so with that, with our knowledge of that, I'll hand it over to Rob, kind of a plan and our approach that we're thinking.
Thank you, Raj. Bless you.
The next slide.
You the next one. Slide, Kim. So with what Roger said is true, you need a plan that is approved by OSTA.
Kim, you're not sharing your screen anymore.
This was the only other slide, Rob.
Oh, my sneeze must have messed it up. Sorry about that.
This is the last slide that we have.
But given that a plan is needed before any and to be approved before any equipment can even be looked at or considered, and it's a very detailed plan, as Roger said, with a lot of engineering analysis and data collection, the thought was that a lot of towns, especially the smaller towns, will not have this capability in-house. And even the larger towns may not be familiar. The engineering staff might not be familiar with all these requirements. So therefore, we're suggesting we go out for an RFQ to identify an on-call consultant that is specifically required to qualified to produce a plan like this. So that is the thought. We brought that in front of our transportation committee. It got their blessing that we go out. We'd likely be contacting DOT and OSTA, maybe even have OSTA staff sit on our selection committee for this on-call consultant, just to make sure they know all the ins and outs of what's required to get approval from OSTA. So that would be one idea. Along with this, when we rolled out this to some of our member municipalities and our transportation committee, they were very interested in piggybacking on this RFQ with another on-call list just for general traffic engineering services. A lot of the towns have a need for specific services related to just anything else other than the automated enforcement, just general traffic engineering services. And we got a lot of interest on that front. So our proposal, and we'd love to get your comments on any thoughts or comments, is to go out for an RFQ to establish two on-call lists, one specifically for experts on this automated enforcement and putting it together a plan. There's also in the legislation, there's reporting requirements after your whole system is up and running. The qualified engineering staff could also assist in that regard. We do anticipate the way these are set up. A lot of times, the equipment provider actually takes care of that step of the process. But certainly, that would be a service that this consultant could also provide. So, I don't know if there's any thoughts or suggestions, but that is our thought: is to move ahead with an RFQ for two on-call lists, one for general traffic engineering services, and one specific to engineering support for this for the automated traffic enforcement.
Rob, it's John Coleman. I should have asked this at the Transportation Committee meeting, but why Why aren't they doing any non-signalized intersections, you know, which are stop sign controlled? It's, again, my pitch for the smaller communities where the majority of the intersections are not signalized, but still have all the issues of running stop signs and accidents and all that type. This isn't going to help them at all, from what I can gather.
No, and it's not in the legislation, for one. But for two, I'm not sure if haven't seen the equipment that would take care of that, the technical equipment. And Roger, have you?
Well, there is the other locations category. And I think that they mentioned roadway segments there. Whether we could inquire whether a stop sign location could be considered under the other category, I don't know.
And that would be helpful if it is, particularly for the, you know, our rural friends who don't have any signals at all, other than on state roads. And some of, you know, the majority of intersections in Bloomfield, I can tell you, are not signalized.
Right. I think, as I said that, I think the law is for traffic signal violations and not stop sign violations, but we can look into that a little more.
What does the group think about the RFP process for these on-call services?
Hey, Peter, this is Fred. Yeah, so as I think I mentioned the last time, Weathersfield has adopted the ordinance. We've been looking at these requirements, and I think to the point that was made, they are pretty onerous for a small staff like we have to pull all this together. We've been looking at next steps. I'll tell you that some of the vendors that supply the equipment are saying, "Oh, we can put that information for you, put that together for you," which, you know, we're not going down that road. So I think it would be great if we could do an RFP to provide the services to put the plan together, because that's going to be probably the biggest lift. And then once we get it approved, you know, if you all do the RFP for the vendor, just sets everything up nicely for us. So I totally support it.
Thanks, Fred. Jonathan?
Yeah, trying to get the camera working here. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I'd suggest once it's if it's ready in draft form, you can just circulate it to the towns just to see if their engineering staff can review it and provide some suggestions as to whether or not something might even be able to be added. So I think it's a great idea.
Yep. Thank you, Jonathan. A quick question for the traffic folks. What do you think a response might be from the engineering community? You think there'd be interest in, especially the automated traffic one?
I don't know. This is the first time this has been out there. Our thought as staff here, and both coming from the consultant world, both Roger and I, we thought that making it one on-call consultant would spice the pot and get more responses, because this is sort of a one-time deal. I mean, once you get the plan approved for one community, you're done, you know? So one thing that makes the pot sweeter is that we have 134 towns in our purchasing council. So that would be good. We're a little hesitant to select more than one just because it is such a new thing. We thought that we'd get more, such a narrow band that we thought we'd get more interest by selecting one.
I can appreciate that. I guess my concern is we know that engineering firms are pretty pretty busy in multiple disciplines, and just having a list of one to pick from, maybe especially when it's traffic engineering as well as developing the plan for the automated devices, that would, you know, that's the initial thought I had, was maybe there you know, maybe if there's a couple, especially given, again, I from a Windsor perspective, we already contract out some of our traffic engineering components, but we are too struggling with getting all the information together, similar to what Fred said for the devices.
Well, it's been on our list. Let me just mention our full plan, and another reason why we bought one is we were thinking one for the automated enforcement and then two for the general engineering, because we got feedback from our transportation committee that they were very interested in having multiple. Though another reason for one, and we don't have to do one, we can do two for automated enforcement also, but there are a number of towns that have gotten SS4A money and are looking to find engineering support now. And according to the federal documents, you need to select through a qualified bid process. And we thought that this would more accurately reflect or more accurately satisfy that requirement for those towns if they wanted to contract with this firm. As said, we don't have to do one. We could do two if we're open to suggestions on that front.
Peter, Rob's comments pretty much reflect the sentiments by all the representatives, which are primarily engineers, on the Transportation Committee, who felt that, you know, they wanted, thought it would be best for two for the general traffic engineering, but one for the automated. But again, they were open to either, but that was their leaning at the meeting on Monday.
Yep. Thanks, John and Rob. Anybody have any other questions or thoughts? I think overall, I think it's a great, it'd be great to be able to see what the market might bear, if you will, on both of those fronts. I guess the question that I put, it's been a while since we talked about this, but has any, other than Weathersfield, has any other community gone as far as adopting a ordinance? Bob, I thought you guys, Canton had drafted one. I'm not sure if you guys had actually approved it or not.
Got one drafted. We haven't approved it yet. We're going to have a public hearing on it next month. We are looking to go a little different route. We were looking at one of the consultants that basically claim they can package the whole thing. They own the cameras. They, you know, process the tickets and that whole process. But, you know, we haven't moved forward on it to that extent yet. And maybe the engineering process is the way to go instead. But when the consultants come, they certainly do promise you an awful lot and do kind of indicate that they can run everything soup to nuts and just have a local police officer review the actual video to be the final saying who gets the citation.
Yeah. So. All right. Based upon the comments you've had here, I think that it's a move forward, and we concur with the, in general, with the Transportation Committee.
So. Thank you, Peter. And we'll keep the committee posted on progress.
Any sense of what kind of time frame, Rob, that this might take between?
Well, I heard that that going out for an RFQ, we'd probably want to get our engineers to review it is a comment I heard here. So we'd be reaching out to them. We'd want to check with OSTA too before we put out the RFQ. So maybe within a month for the RFQ, and then you know, whatever time frame it takes, a few maybe 2 or 3 months to select.
Yeah, got summer prompt. Okay. Fantastic. Any other questions for the transportation crew?
I have a question for you, Pete.
Sure.
And excuse my ignorance. I'll probably be full of ignorance for a little bit more moving forward till I get up to speed. But the fines associated with this, does any of that come back to the municipality, or is it all towards the state?
I believe it all comes to the state, or I don't. Roger, I'm not sure if it's 100% to the, I mean, excuse me, to the towns.
I believe it goes back to the municipalities for use in traffic projects, but I don't have the wording right in front of me.
Yeah.
There, of course, there is a fee that your vendor's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
It is limited by the legislation.
$15 fee, processing fee, and the first violation, I believe, is $50 limit, and the second, I believe, is $75 for the second violation in subsequent, if I remember right.
I don't recall from my police days the cost of an infraction for running a traffic light. To what is that? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
No, top of my head, no. I mean, the fines were hotly debated as the legislation was actually contested during the legislative process here, which is why some may view them as being on the low side.
But there's no insurance points against the registered owner of the vehicle if the fine is paid?
Don't know.
Yeah, we could look into that.
I think these things may be, questions that citizens may have. I know because I've been caught in a number of these things in New York City. They just pop up and next thing you know, you're flashed. And the way those things are is that if you pay it, there's no issue and no points. But if you choose to contest it, then you know, you're subject to, you know, your due process, which could relate in a fine against you. So I can tell you in New York City, it's a $50 charge. And you get charged, you pay. And so I'm just curious as you were talking about the equity piece of it all, just trying to understand the impact on the citizens. And also if there's anything for the town. I know, at least my understanding when I was in policing, a municipal officer writes a state infraction, then that infraction, the fine of that goes towards the state. I don't think we recouped anything as a town. So if you're saying that this is different, then I'll be curious and interested in hearing that as well.
This is different. The legislation does allow the municipalities to retain, I believe it's all of it, but I stand corrected. And now they did also, several years ago, they did change the, for certain violations, the towns do get some of the revenues. Not all of it goes back to the state now. They've switched that in, I don't know, probably eight years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. So
okay. That's good to hear. That's good.
That's
to hear.
That's their version of revenue sharing.
Okay.
My recollection is a little bit fuzzy, but I thought it had to go to other safety improvement projects.
Yep.
So it wasn't just to the general fund, I believe. We'd have to double check that, though.
Yeah, there is language to that affect it.
Yeah.
But I think I read it as fairly broad towards traffic/road safety.
Okay.
And there is no impact on the points for insurance either. And also, it's the tickets can only be enforced after, like on a speeding violation, and they have to be 11 miles over for it to even trigger and get the infraction. But yeah, there's nothing on the points for the stoplight or the speed cameras.
Great. Thank you very much for the questions and look forward to having further discussions once the staff brings that. Freddie, have a question?
Yeah, just real quickly. I believe the legislature this last short session passed the noise camera element to this, which would add to our ability here. And this is something that one of the vendors displayed a lot of detail on and that we saw. And that's another one that New York City's been very effective with. Having just been through there, they have the noise camera set up at several intersections. Is that something that we're going to include into what we're proposing here for the RFPs?
We can look into it. We hadn't discussed it. I just became aware of that the other day from the headlines of the newspaper that was passed.
I think we should put in this RFQ that whoever's selected would keep, you know, any future legislation abreast of it. And I'm sure CONDOT doesn't have guidelines for that yet, but.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for raising that, Fred.
Yep.
Just on a process perspective, Rob, are you thinking you'd circulate the RFP, the draft to the transportation committee members, and then our representatives can then have conversations internally with other folks on the town staffs? Is that what you're envisioning?
Sure.
Okay.
What were the
circulate our RFQ to the TC?
To the TC. Yeah.
I mean, we could TC.
As
an additional step.
Okay. All right. We'll keep an eye open for that and talk to our representatives on transportation committee. In the next month or so.
I can tell you, Bloomfield would also be interested in that that noise violation matter as well. That would be huge. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Alan.
Okay, that looks like that might take care of item number four. We do have item five, which is municipal information sharing, which is a general opportunity for folks to either ask questions of each other or pick each other's brains. I guess I have a general question to ask is whose budgets have, I guess I want to say, failed. I guess that might be the, not sure which one. I've heard a number of them. I know Town of Windsor has not been successful. Tallinn, did I see a hand in Tallinn and in Canton? Oh, goodness.
Avon went down too.
Yeah. Yes, we're so.
Our second referendum is happening now.
Okay. Well, best of luck.
Yeah, Wellington and Coventry also.
How many of you folks have revaluation? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Does anybody else have any pieces of for information sharing?
Hey, Peter, I just had a question for the group. This is Kasia from Manchester, for those that I may have not met. So we are, and I know I've talked to some of you individually about this, but we are getting pretty close to launching our alternative work week pilot. So right now we're still on a regular, like 8-to-5 schedule. So we're looking to do optional for employees, either 4-day or opening town hall late night on Tuesdays and half-day Fridays. And we're kind of giving that discretion by department and by operational need. So I'm going to be talking to our board about that for a final decision in June. But one of the things I'm working on alongside that is doing some sort of survey for the public as, you know, they're accessing town hall, just to make sure their needs are still met. So I'm just wondering if anyone has any sort of survey they've used that, you know, you feel has been successful. I'd love if someone could share that with me. And if not, that is totally fine. But I just figured I'd throw that out there. Thank you.
Thanks, Kasia. That's, I don't know. I think that Plainville did something, didn't they?
Yeah, I talked to Andy.
Mansfield too, Kasia.
Yep, I've talked to Maria as well. Yep, so. Just looking for some more input there. Thank you. And I have to jump off for another meeting. So thank you all very much.
I think Simsbury as well.
Okay.
We're in the process of starting to look at it. But we haven't gotten anywhere close to implementing.
Windsor's letting you guys figure it all out, and then we're gonna take the best.
We're going to our second year and it's working out perfectly. We're open half a day on Fridays and the foot traffic in town hall was hardly anything. So we stay open later on Mondays and also open earlier every morning, and that helps the working people to come in earlier and do what they have to do. So it's working out very, very well. And we've actually attracted new employees with that.
In Mansfield, we've been operating on the four-day work week for most of our departments that were in town hall for about a year and a half now. And we had a short Friday to begin with. We were only here for 4 hours on Friday. The public, staff, everybody's adapted to it really well. Our staff just loves having Fridays off. It's worked out. Just I can't say enough good things about it. And so I think we have a pretty good system in place. You know, we figured out how to deal with floating holidays, et cetera. So I have some samples that a lot of other communities I know have been borrowing from. Our library, non-union staff just started piloting it. Obviously, you know, the library still needs to be open to the public 6 days a week, but sort of especially for like those kind of more administrative functions at the library, we're just kind of starting to do a pilot with that now. But overall, it's worked out really well. No complaints.
Welcome back. That may be a topic for maybe the fall, one of our fall meetings, just to share experiences and see and how it's done across multiple different types of operations. That's been our hang up here.
Yeah, Peter, if I could, sorry, just one piece I will add is for those of our communities that have shared services departments, a number of our staff members who do work in shared services departments, we are making sure that we do provide coverage still 5 days a week because they're supporting the schools as well. So we do have, for example, our fleet staff who provide services to the schools, our IT staff that provide services to the schools, our facility staff that provide services to the schools. Those are some of the exceptions, right, where it just didn't make sense for the department to shut down and collapse to a four-day work week. So there are some exceptions, but again, that's worked out pretty well too.
Thanks, Maria.
And I'll just add, during our pilot, we're not actually going to be closing the town hall because it's employee driven. Like an employee is going to be able to request from their department head for the term of the pilot, a different schedule. We're actually going to be open. So that's how we're kind of trying to measure it and figure out what works and what doesn't, because I think we'll have some issues when it comes to IT and especially, public works when you have four unions there, but three can do it and one can't. So we're going to figure all that out and hopefully it works out well.
That's why they call it a pilot, right? So, alrighty, great. I'm going to jump back up to staff reports. I know we're pushing on time, but I want to make sure if there are any key items, time sensitive items, that we get a chance to share that with the group. Matt?
Yeah, I'll scale my list back, Peter, in the interest of time. Thank you. First, on the legislative front, the shared services bill, House Bill 5056, recall that. It was scaled back somewhat, but ultimately adopted under the bond bill. And it is designed to eliminate local charter or ordinance provisions that would prohibit or preclude shared services. It would also allow us, if we want to reconsider the idea of a regional fair rent commission and other commissions. So the legislation really does a lot of good things, and I would recommend we have a more of a robust conversation on that at a future meeting. My second item, this is also on the list for future agenda items, stormwater management. Recall last year, I believe, about a year ago, we had submitted a grant application under the state's Climate Resilience Fund program, seeking $250,000 to conduct a regional stormwater management study. Well, we did hear recently from DEEP that we are getting that grant. So we're in the process of finalizing the scope of services. Heidi Samokar, a Talon veteran, relatively new hire here at CROG, she's gonna be our project manager. So really looking forward to that project, and I know it will be of interest to this committee. And then last but certainly not least, wanted to plug our annual meeting. Hopefully folks can attend. It's gonna be held at June 5th. From 2 to 5 p.m. at Building 4 in Manchester. We're going to be in Manchester this year. This is going to be our 50th annual meeting. our 50th annual meeting, Anthony, and that's not a redundancy. That's his name. He's the state's chief marketing officer, great speaker. If you've had a chance to hear him, he's going to be our keynote speaker at the annual meeting. So hopefully many folks can come. So those are the items I want to quickly touch on, Peter.
Great. Thank you very much, Matt. Any other, Kim, do you have anything or?
Just real quick, Peter, I want to encourage when those on, oh, sorry, Kim, I'll be quick, that Matt put together, if you haven't seen it in our latest newsletter that went out last week and on LinkedIn, a nice legislative overview that highlights, he worked on that with John Harkin, our lobbyist, so that gives you an in-depth look at what CROC's priorities were and what's happening, so I encourage folks, if they haven't taken a look at that, to please read that.
Excellent.
Thank you for sharing that with us. And yes, it was a very nice recap. Thank you, Matt and company.
And just real quick, everyone, salt bid is being issued on June 6th. So for those of you who have not sent me your quantities, please get those to me like yesterday. And also we're going to be, I am currently collecting quantities for snowplow blades. That's going to be issued on June 26th. So please keep an eye out for that email as well. That's it.
Well, Kim, we're just getting over winter, so thank
it's
you very
pretty
much.
It's pretty depressing, the timing of these bids, yeah, isn't it? Exactly. I know. Last thing that's we want to think about is road salt and snowplow. Sorry, guys.
It's good. good planning, though, Kim. Thank you. Good planning. All righty. What else we got from staff, folks, who I may have overlooked? Anything else?
Yeah, I think you want to mention.
So I just have two things. One is that for those who saw the announcement from EPA, CROG did get $1 million in brownfield supplemental revolving loan fund funding yesterday. That was announced yesterday, so we're excited about that. And we are doing the micromobility RFP that closed yesterday as well. This is near and dear to my heart, and I'm looking forward to the demos. And that you'll be seeing those in Hartford again. And if anybody's interested in doing scooters in their cities, please, or their towns, please contact Mike Cipriano.
Great. Thank you very much.
I can mention a couple of you if you have a few minutes.
I don't know who's talking, so.
Elizabeth Sanderson.
Sorry.
Okay,
go ahead, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Sanderson, Bill Coordinator, tracking the funding from the federal government. So we have the State Streets and Roads for All. There's still one more round in this year's fiscal year 24 funding. So that would be due August 29th. And I was thinking about when we're talking about the automated traffic, if some of the funding coming through from that could then be used as to meet local match. So starting to think a little more creatively about how to fund some of these leveraging funding coming in to be used towards other projects to promote safety. But yeah, State Streets and Roads for All due August 29th. There's also a couple of other bridge, there's a bridge program going on. Also the DECD Community Investment Fund is due on June 21st. And we have our newsletter that I hope everybody is receiving, and an upcoming workshop on stormwater management that a few folks have already registered for. So thank you. And that would be to talk about green infrastructure. So if anybody has questions about funding or needs ideas on what you can apply for, feel free to reach out to me or visit our BIL webpage.
Thanks, Elizabeth. I would just encourage folks to keep an open eye for the in lead time. Preparing these grants are not easy, even with all the help that Elizabeth and company can provide. The lift is still tremendous. We're looking at the Safe Streets one now, and you know it's August, and it feels like August is a long time away. But to put together a competitive grant, just heads up. So, alrighty. So, anything else from staff? Okay, great.
No, that's it.
Great. So, one comment that I just would like to make is that we've been having these meetings essentially remote. It's something that I would like, as we talk about the fall schedule. I would like us to at least to have either a September or October meeting in person downtown. I think it's vital that we get together and connect in a different venue, in a different form. I know it's convenient to do it virtually, but I think it's important for us at least a couple times a year to get together and be able to network in a different fashion and share our experiences and what's happening in our community, so we can learn and get refreshed by each other's experiences. So look, keep an eye open for that. Our next meeting is June 18th, regular time, noon time. Again, we try to keep these to about an hour and 15 minutes at max.
Peter,
Maria.
Fred and I are both on the cost board, and we meet every other month, like right after this meeting. So September, at least I think probably for our schedule, because of that conflict, would be better for in person, at least for me.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that. So, all righty. Well, thank you very much. Covered a lot of ground today. And Al, welcome. Feel free to call any of us. So, all righty. Thanks, folks. Enjoy the beautiful weather.
Thanks, everybody. Take
Have
care.
A good one.
Thank you.
Memorial Day weekend, folks. Enjoy Memorial Day. God bless
you. Thank you.
Yep.